Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Your letters coming up in a bit, but first the political junkie Ken Rudin. Ken, it feels like, I don't know, 3 weeks since I talked to you last, and it was just a week ago. So welcome. Good to talk to you again.
You know, we say this every week, but every week it's just jam-packed with stuff that we either expect or don't anticipate.
I know.
But I mean, this week has just been unbelievable.
I know. I'm going to start with sexual harassment again, because so much of my email is about that. And I'm going to be reading some of that here in just a minute. But it's this ongoing wave of sexual harassment allegations. I want to talk about whether you sense political change coming out of this. I mean, what's the discussion sound like from your vantage point near Washington?
Well, you know something, 3 weeks ago, two weeks ago, you and I had this great conversation. You had a great show that was for a full hour. And the question you left everybody with was this a watershed moment?
Right.
And I say it is. And I think there is a sense in Washington that politics as usual, I should say business as usual, is no longer to be tolerated. And I say that not only because every member of the House and Senate and their staffs have to go through sexual harassment training, but for the longest time, any kind of sexual misbehavior by members of Congress was always done in secret. Congress would spend $15 million in penalties and settlements to keep things quiet, but we never knew who was responsible. We never knew who the accused were. And that sounds like it's disappearing. The fact is that in the wake of 3 or 4 days from last Sunday, when Nancy Pelosi gave a full-throated defense of John Conyers,
oh, yeah,
to 4 days later, where she says that Conyers has got to go. And, you know, then all the people who were defending Al Franken say, well, it was just a kiss during the USO tour. And then it was only one or two other women. And then it's more and more women. And then people say, well, wait a second. This isn't one or two women. It's still one or two women more than they should be. So all the things that people would either shrug their shoulders or roll their eyes or dismiss as insignificant is no longer insignificant. I think it's a big change. And I think it's changed certainly the ways of Congress and Capitol Hill.
So Ken, you mentioned Conyers and you also mentioned that appearance by Nancy Pelosi a week ago Sunday on Meet the Press, which was just awful, pretty much. She had a hard time answering the question.
She knows it.
She did, right. She had to put out multiple statements after that. But what do you think happens with Conyers if he refuses to resign, which isn't that where we're at right now?
Well, yes and no. One, he's 88 years old. Two, he went to the hospital either suffering from exhaustion or whatever. He says it's most likely, well, I think it's almost all but likely that he will not seek re-election in Congress in 2018.
Well, but that's a whole nother year.
It sure is. And of course, the fact is that, you know, I mean, he was elected in 1964. If you think of the way Congress and members of Congress behaved back in 1964, let alone 2004, I mean, it's just a lifetime ago. I'm not convinced he's able to stay. I know the Congressional Black Caucus is in no hurry to let him go. But at the same time, there are others, younger members moving up in the ranks who feel that the behavior that was kind of, just winked at the past is no longer. I'm not convinced he could ride it out. But others could just do what Joe Barton of Texas is doing. He's the guy who sent naked pictures of himself to one of the women he was having an affair with. And he announced pretty quietly that he would not seek re-election in 2018. But there's a big difference between just not seeking re-election and being forced out.
Yes.
And there was more and more efforts to force people out.
Call here for you, Ken, from Bob in St. Paul. Hey, Bob, what do you want to ask Ken?
Hey, I'm sure you folks are aware of the New York Times editorial piece by Billy Bush today.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, Ken, what's your take on whether that's going to kind of move the meter back to focus more on Trump and the myriad allegations against him over the years with sexual harassment?
You know, Bob asks a good question, because we think during the campaign, all these women, was it 9, was it 12? I don't even remember anymore. But how many women came forward with allegations of sexual harassment against Trump?
12.
Yeah, right, sexual harassment against Trump. And then he was elected, and then it seemed to disappear. And then, yes, we're focusing on Roy Moore, who's, you know, 8 days from now, his political future will be decided. And Roy Moore and the Al Frankens and the John Conyers and people like that. But Trump seems to have just, it just seems like everybody is paying the price except Donald Trump. And the fact that the president of the United States said last week that, well, I'm not sure if that's my voice on that famous or infamous Access Hollywood.
Oh,
I mean, do you not
man.
Know if you said it or not? You're not
unbelievable.
And then Billy Bush, to his credit, as Bob points out, in today's New York Times has an editorial, an op-ed that says, wait a second, Mr. President, that was definitely you.
And we hear the voice. I mean, we have the audio tape. It is his voice.
Well, there was a great line in the Marx Brothers movie, and I think it was Chico, not Groucho. I think it was Chico.
Yeah.
But he says, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? And President Trump says it all the time. Who are you going to believe, the facts or the things that I tell you? And that's exactly what's been going on with this.
Ken, I think this would be a good moment for a Nixon reference, too, since we're...
Well, you know, how could you... When Michael... Well, look, I'm not the only one who thinks of these things. But when Michael Flynn pleaded guilty to the FBI for lying to the FBI and is cooperating with Robert Mueller and is talking about bringing others down, and then to see Donald Trump's unbelievable tweets yesterday about how the FBI is terrible, they're in tatters, they're liars, in tatters, I think he said, the FBI standing is the worst in history. If what he had to say about Michael Flynn and what he tried to do to either get Comey to go easy on him or to fire him because he knew what was going on, if that does not hint of obstruction of justice. Now, of course, the president's lawyer, John Dowd, says yesterday, well, the president could never be accused of obstruction of justice because he's the implementer of justice in this country. God help us all if that's how we decide these things. But I mean, it's just wow. Wow.
We should also mention that Donald Trump Jr. is going to meet with the House Intelligence Committee next week. So that's also on the agenda. Ken, this got buried in a lot of other news, but I really want to talk about it with you. And this is, since we're talking about Twitter and the president, President Trump's retweet last week of the doctored videos from this fear-mongering fringe group in Britain. I think he retweeted three times. This group.
Right.
He's essentially putting a presidential stamp of approval on this non-factual, far-right hate speech is what it is.
Right.
I don't think we should miss this.
No, we shouldn't. And I certainly haven't. And I'm sure I know a lot of people have not as well. I think within a day or two of the famous Pocahontas speech, where in a solemn White House ceremony, the president of the United States has to bring up the Pocahontas reference to Elizabeth Warren, because God forbid he can go 2 minutes without talking about people who is perceived as enemies. But the fact that he would take a far right, over disgraced and discredited British group that offered up doctored and sometimes incorrect, false videos that seem to show imply Muslim violence. And then when Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, well, these videos may not be real, she said, it's not important whether it's real or not. The point is that there is serious Muslim extremism out there. Now, for somebody...
I mean, it's upside down land. I mean, that just makes no sense.
It's bizarro world. Exactly.
I mean, yeah. So we're all concerned about Muslim extremism. So let's retweet a group that has the most distorted, hate-mongering, perception of that.
Exactly.
Oh,
that doesn't mean there's no Muslim violence, so why not tweet with everyone? It's just unbelievable. And how many times, I mean, if I had $1 million every time I said unbelievable on your show, I'd be very rich.
Yeah,
but even if I had a dollar every time.
I have a feeling if you had $1 million, you wouldn't be doing the Political Junkie with Kerry Miller, but okay.
I would never leave
you. You would never leave me? Okay, good to know.
Are you kidding?
Here's a call from Jennifer in Stillwater. Hi, Jennifer. What do you want to know from Ken? Hi.
I'm just looking at the New York Times from December 1st, and it's an article about how Republican Texas Congressman Blake Farenthold paid out $84,000 of taxpayer money to settle a sex harassment claim just a couple years ago in Congress. So it's funny that the media keeps talking about Conyers, But I've literally never heard anyone on TV or radio talk about Texas Republican Blake Farenthold, who paid out $84,000 in taxpayer funds recently.
Okay. Jennifer, I think we get the point. It's hard to keep up with this, Ken. Jennifer's got a good point here. I haven't talked much about Barton either. All these claims are coming forward and details, and it's hard to keep up.
And just go on Twitter and search Blake Farenthold, and you'll see the pictures of him parading around with women who are not his wife in this pajama outfit that is just so over the top. And yes, to everybody's credit, everybody who tweeted about Farenthold's activities, and they said, "Oh, him, he had to dole out $84,000. I never would have thought it." I mean, my goodness, the things he said about women and the photographic proof about his behavior is just, well, look, the fact is, we're coming up with names like Joe Barton and Blake Farenthold that we were not familiar with. And as you said, led off this broadcast, whether this is a political change going on in Washington, I say absolutely yes.
So, Ken, we'll talk about the tax bill next Monday, because by that time they'll be deep into the conference committee or working on that at some point, okay?
That's correct.
That's
correct. As a matter of fact, they may start off that process as soon as today.
Ken Rudin with us, the political junkie, on with us on Mondays. Ken, thanks. Good to chat.
Carrie, I will never leave you. Remember that.
I'll keep it in mind. Now for some of the email and letters that I've been getting from you, mostly about our sexual harassment conversations. This is just a fraction of the email, and I've asked Nancy Yang to come in. She's a digital editor here. Thank you, Nancy, for joining me to read some of these.
Thank you. Hello.
I'm going to start off with Cheryl. She says, "I believe that your reaction to the Franken accusations are a knee-jerk reaction based on emotion. These situations need to be evaluated on an individual basis. I haven't always been a Franken supporter. I feel strongly he's been set up because of how strong of a politician he is, not because I hold politicians to a different standard."
Yeah, you know, there's been just a wide range of reactions. But, you know, on the other end, Dave wrote in to counter that and said, you know, when he heard Kathy's interview, he didn't think that she was taking a position either way. He actually said that he heard a solid independent journalist asking the tough questions. So,
yeah, Kathy Werzer was criticized by some of you and applauded by others of you about the interview with Senator Al Franken. And then I heard from a lot of you about my discussion with Ken Rudin. And there were a lot of rude and profane emails. I've chosen some that are not that. So if you want me to really read the email, keep the swear words out of it. Here's Kevin, who says, "As a feminist and NPR leadership circle and legacy member, I strongly object to how you've treated Garrison Keillor and Senator Al Franken during your interviews and commentaries. By hearing only his accuser side of the story, you've denied Keillor due process. And by advocating the severing of all relations with him, you're treating him unjustly, losing sight of proportionality, treating Keillor as morally equivalent to, for example, Matt Lauer. You're not helping the cause of women with this. You are hurting them." Nancy?
Yeah, going back to that equivalency, here's another reader who said that, you know, he or she actually didn't leave a name, wasn't angry or profane or accusing us of political bias, but they said that their concern actually was that the discussion lacked nuance and took too strong of a tone or a judgment, because they don't think that it's right to lump Franken into the same boat as you know, Roy Moore and Charlie Rose and Harvey Weinstein.
Okay. Here's Darcy, who appreciates the ongoing discussion. She says, "My main concern regarding the interview is that I feel Kathy missed a huge opportunity to advance the conversation beyond blame and shame of either victim or abuser. When men are discovered to have committed these kinds of offenses, do we want them to behave like Al Franken did or like Roy Moore did?" Well, I would say to Darcy that Kathy's interview was a straight-ahead interview with Senator Al Franken about his future and what he had to say and how he was feeling about the allegations. My show is more about the context of that. What does it all mean? What do listeners think? we're having a fuller whole discussion about that. Darcy, thanks for the email.
Yeah, and here's Jane. She actually brings up an interesting point, going back to the discussion with Rankin, that, you know, his words about being shocked and embarrassed and ashamed actually reflect his discomfort, and it's more about being exposed rather than taking on any responsibility for understanding his behavior or his position of power and privilege. And she says, yes, he has apologized, but that is only because he got named. Would there have been an apology if not for women speaking up? There is no sense that he or other exposed men really get it.
Here's Jennifer, who wrote in to say, I want to thank you for the most recent discussions on Al Franken. We all have our biases. It's human. But where the challenge lies is not taking the time or effort to look at our opinions in an objective way. She adds then later in the email, a female relative of mine said, well, at least Al Franken was just kidding. It wasn't that bad. I realized the dysfunction of her comment and realized that we women need to take accountability of not allowing said interactions or comments to pass.
Yeah. And Anna, I'm going to end with her. She says, you know, thank you to you and Kathy for both modeling and maintaining your journalistic integrity during this morass of political tribalism and societal absurdity in which we find ourselves, is what she writes. And to this point, you know, about the profane emails, the letters that you're getting, she says, I'm sorry that some of our fellow humans just don't know how to express disagreement while upholding a standard of respect.
I appreciate knowing what you think. I'd appreciate it also if you keep the emails polite and somewhat brief. I'm getting, you know, like 750 word emails from people these days. I want to read as many as I can. I want to share as many as I can with you. So if you'll keep it concise, but you are always welcome to email kmiller@npr.org.